You might remember Russ Harding. He was the director of the EPA or the...
DQ.
DQ, okay. Good morning, Russ.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. Here a while back, Diane Katz, director of Science, Environmental, and Technology Policy with the Mackinac Center, wrote a paper about the fact that bad science fuels environmental policies. Now, you were director of the DEQ. One of the things she says here is burning and plowing grasslands, rainforests, savannas, and peatland for crop cultivation releases huge amounts of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, and says in a stunning reversal of environmental doctrine, researchers have determined that ethanol and other highly subsidized biofuels are more polluting than petroleum.
Mm-hmm.
You agree with that?
Well, it's yeah, I do, actually. Diane wrote on was based on a study that just came out in February, and actually I've had a chance to look at that study in some depth, and it's very well done. But basically, what they've done is they've looked at ethanol not just in terms of burning it as fuel for an automobile, but in terms of the entire production, what they might call, sometimes they call life cycle, everything it takes to produce that ethanol from corn and or cellulose too. They talk about that in report, all the way to the time that you actually burn it as fuel in your vehicle. And what is the net environmental impact on that in relationship to gasoline? Now, what's interesting is basically what they're saying, which makes some sense when you really look at it, but what happens when you convert agricultural land or grow more corn to produce ethanol, in putting more corn or more land into production, you release that carbon dioxide. That carbon is stored up in plant material. So the particular concern is as the demand grows more and more for ethanol, you'll see more forest land around the world, not just the United States, but around the world that would be converted to cropland and release all this carbon dioxide.
Okay, so really, in Brazil, mm-hmm. where they can grow a lot of sugar cane,
right.
and it is a natural crop, they are using the sugar cane, which they say they can get far more ethanol out of than any other agricultural crop,
mm-hmm.
and they're selling gas for 10, 15 cents a gallon down there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's different than obviously from the United States, where we're trying to take corn, which takes a lot of corn to make the ethanol, which is in return raising the cost of everything that corn is in.
Well, that's exactly
which
right.
Which is another part
corn
of this equation.
It takes a lot of fertilizer, it takes a lot of water, and it takes a lot of land to grow. And so the cost of fertilizer is up, because fertilizer, is a petroleum-derived
right.
Product. So that's up. So the cost of growing corn is up. Now, if you take a look, and I actually have a car that is capable of run on ethanol, or what they call E85.
Right.
And there's actually a station just around the corner from where I live that carries that. And it's interesting because I haven't used it. The only reason I haven't used it is because the cost is too high. And what happens with ethanol is you get about 20 to 25% less fuel economy on your vehicle. And they've done studies on it. Actually, EPA's even done run the numbers. And depending, what I happen to have is a Chevy Impala. But depending on the vehicle you've got, it usually runs 20 to 25% less fuel efficient. So in other words, if gasoline is $3 a gallon, it would cost you money if you paid more than $2.40 a gallon for ethanol, because that's how much you're going to lose in mileage. And the matter of fact is ethanol is only about 10% cheaper, at least here in Lansing.
And part of,
probably true pretty much around the state.
And I'm sure part of that is because, Russ, the availability is slim right now. We're talking to Russ Harding, and we're talking about bad science fuels environmental policies. So this big drive by, in this case, the governor of Michigan and others to help get more people employed and everything else by building these biofuel plants, not the best thing in the world to be doing right now.
Well, there's a growing concern about it environmentally, and of course, you know, the gasoline is from environmental groups, is oil has become the sort of the whipping boy. You know, if anything to do with oil, it's bad. But you really have to be a little more sophisticated, I think, when you look at these things, and the government needs to be real careful because when they try to manipulate the marketplace, and the way they do that is with subsidies. And in this case, they've provided pretty heavy subsidies for ethanol, for production of growing and production of corn and use of ethanol. And in doing that, they try to intervene in the marketplace, so to speak, to get the kind of outcome they want. You know, history tells us that seldom works. Markets are pretty dynamic. They're pretty complex. It's pretty hard for us to understand them. I think we're seeing that with the subprime meltdown across the United States right now in the mortgage business. And so it's pretty difficult to manipulate these markets, but that's what we've tried to do. And then what's sort of ironic about this whole thing, we do it supposedly for environmental purposes, global warming, which still remains very controversial. I've kind of been joking this winter. It's, I think it sort of set the global warming back a little bit.
I think it's global cooling.
Yeah, it's global warming is killing us. It's been a pretty cold winter throughout the world, actually. But all that aside, so when we do that, we have unintended consequences, and that's what always makes me real nervous when the government starts trying to manipulate these things. And one huge unintended consequence is driving up the cost of food. And that's become a major problem. And part of that, now it's not all due to that, but part of that's due to taking so much corn and using it for trying to produce fuel when it is a mainstay for livestock feed and into regular agricultural products.
Cereals. The corn we, you know, have as a side dish, as the vegetable dish with your main dish and everything else. Yeah, it's using it all up.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, when you use that for that, of course, then what happens is even the cost of bread has gone up.
Big time.
What happens is more agricultural land is then devoted to growing corn and taking out of wheat production, for example.
Because they can get more money for the corn, right?
That's right. Yeah, and farmers obviously are business people, and you can't blame them. They're going to do what any intelligent business person would do, is they're going to grow what's going to get them the best return.
Of course, if this whole thing collapsed, then what do they do?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The report just came out today. I know you may have seen that, but the farmers report to the feds what they're going to grow, how much, of what acreage.
Mm-hmm.
And the acreage for corn this year is going to be down 8%. And I thought that was rather interesting because I think the ethanol market actually has become a little soft. And so it's going to be down 8%. And part of the reason for that is because the cost of fertilizer is so high due to the high cost of oil. And because that fertilizer cost is so high, they're going to plant more soybeans, which require less fertilizer. But see, that goes contrary. Again, that's the market adjusting, which is what should happen. But now what we have with the energy bill that Congress recently passed, they're going to try to manipulate that again, and they're going to greatly increase the amount of mandated ethanol to be produced.
But now those same lines, Russ, doesn't that also mean that indirectly the farmers, by doing that, are also going to raise the price of corn?
The farmers won't raise it, but the market will.
The market will, yeah.
Well, that, and in essence, that was what will happen, because obviously if you mandate now that you have to have so much ethanol produced, and it takes a lot of corn, a lot of acres of corn to produce that, they're going to have to put more acres into it. That's going to raise the price of corn, and it's going to take more and more acreage out of production for other crops. That you're going to raise food prices across the board, which are already gone up in a record amount this year.
And if you're going to raise the price of corn, Russ, then it sounds like to me that means the price of ethanol is going to go up. And if it's not a good buy, and as people slowly but surely learn that if you've got a car that uses ethanol, you're going to get roughly 25% less miles per gallon. I mean, you know, is the next thing the government's going to mandate that we each have to buy so many gallons of ethanol a week?
Well, that's exactly what they're doing. They've already talking about that, and the way they're going to do that is mandate a certain percentage of the gasoline content has to be ethanol. And some states have already done that. The feds haven't done that across the board. Michigan has not done that.
What if your car doesn't take ethanol?
Well, any modern car will burn up to 10%, according to what the manufacturers say, without harm. But when you get beyond 10%, then that becomes a concern amongst the automakers.
Which is why they call it the E85 bit, right?
Yeah, the E85. Some cars are capable. They call them flex fuel
right,
or whatever.
Yep.
You know, I think Chevrolet pickups, Impalas, Ford has a number of vehicles, Chrysler, will run on just regular ethanol, but any car, you know, modern car will run on up to 10%. Now, you go to some states like Iowa where you can't hardly buy gasoline there. It doesn't have 10% ethanol in it. But now what they're talking about is maybe mandating as much as 20 or 30%.
Which means, once again, you're going to start playing with refineries and what they have to refine. And when you start playing with the refineries and that they've got to have this much gas going this place, then that just raises the whole gasoline. It sure sounds like we're going to keep doing it no matter what the cost is, at least here in the interim. Would you agree or disagree?
Well, yeah, I think there'll be a strong push. You know, there's sort of been this perfect storm of concern about global warming, and those that don't adhere to that concern, I think there are many concerned about us being more independent in our use of oil. So I would guess, though, that it's probably a fairly short-term solution. It's going to take something. It's either going to have to be a real scientific breakthrough where, you know, biofuels would make a lot of sense if you can use them from waste material. When you have to start trying to grow crops and to produce them, then it becomes real questionable, as a lot of the studies are now showing. If you can use waste materials and they can perfect that, and there probably will be some market for biofuels in the future, but this my guess is large incentives and trying to develop a huge agricultural industry to support that is probably not going to be much of a long-term strategy.
It's one of those things that you look at now that is becoming a cottage industry of sorts, and certainly is reducing the cost of some schools to maintain their athletic fields, is the fact that they've found that by shredding tires that have been tossed away, you can make wonderful playing fields, such as the field at Ford Field in Detroit, or at CMU and many other colleges now around America. They're using the shredded tires. It's better on the kids. They don't get hurt when they fall down. And there's no expense in watering the field or fertilizing the field. So if you can figure out a way to, like you say, use the waste, do you think as this moves along for us that there's going to be more push to do other types of more work on the batteries for electric cars and stuff like that, or more like a diesel generator system like they use in train? I mean, where are we going with all this, or is there a way to go? What waste can you go to for a fuel?
Well, I think that in the long term, probably going to see less petroleum used. And, you know, one way you can do that is, of course, you know, we've got the hybrids now, and we're going to see a lot more hybrid vehicles. That's going to really be forced by the new CAFE regulation
right,
that Congress has passed.
And we're not talking about eating. We're talking about CAFE, which is the miles per gallon and all this bit, yeah.
Yeah, okay, the fuel economy standards. I think that, you know, a lot of the car companies, General Motors, for example, is working very hard now to come in with the plug-in hybrids, and the
yep.
difference between that and a regular hybrid is that they perfect these batteries so you can go maybe 40 miles or so just on electric. And so if your daily commute isn't further than that, you wouldn't use any petroleum at all. Now, from an environmental standpoint, though, the key there is that you have to figure ways to generate electricity in a clean manner. Otherwise, you're not going to get a net gain. In fact, they've done studies on that showing that actually you can end up with a negative environmentally over use of gasoline if you don't use clean electricity generation.